Blog Talk Radio.
And tonight we're going to be talking to Mayan descendant Susie Cawthorn. How are you, Susie?
I'm great, Blue Water. How are you?
I'm doing fine. I remember when we got on the phone with your grandmother. Remember that?
That was my comadre down there in Mexico. Yes, yes. I have something kind of interesting that I'd like to share with all you folks out there, and you will.
You bet.
When I was giving these... Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Go right ahead.
Did you want to say something?
Oh. No, you just go right ahead. This is your time.
As I told you years before, I lived 30 years in Mexico. 30-odd years. And I became... I don't mean to say this in... I knew more than a lot of the Mexicans themselves knew about their own country down there. I lived it to the fullest. I had forgettable and unforgettable moments down there. But now, we flash forward. Here I am in Washington State. I was working as a tour guide in an Indian village, and we would teach the folklore and the customs of the Coast Salish Indians up here in the Pacific Northwest. And I was telling the children the story about the dog's tail, and I had to laugh every time I told it, because down there in Mexico, how many miles away is this, right? Thousands from one border to the other and beyond. There's the story about the dogs, and the dogs and the people, they all live together and they all talk together and blah, blah, blah. And they had this big party, and the dogs were told that they had to hang their tails up on the wall. And so long story shorter, the building catches on fire, and the dogs run out, and they just grab any old tail that they can find and put it on. Now, at least 2,000 miles away, 10 years later, here I am telling these children this story about how the dog people, because for Native American people, everything is people. It's the bird people, it's the tree people, it's the frog people, it's the dog people. Everything is people, as you know. So the dog people live separately, and they noticed, the old dog noticed that inside this, the two-legged building, that would be us, they had these warm fires and water baskets full of water baskets or bowls of food for all nice and warm and ready, and dancing and drumming and the eldest of all these dogs, he had been spying, so he ran back to his dog village. And of course, as you know, when you come home from some place, all your dogs get excited. Well, these did too. And they got all excited and jumping. What did you see? What did they say? What did they do? What are we going to do? What's happening? Oh, no, he says. Never mind that. Let me tell you about this great longhouse that these people have. Shall I go into all the detail, or shall I make it a little shorter?
Okay.
And I want you to build me one just like it. Well, what do you think the dog said to that? They looked around at each other and thought, why do we want to build a great longhouse for you? He said, well, when we have a great longhouse, we'll have nice warm fires, and we'll have bowls full of food and water baskets full of water and dancing and drumming and storytelling, and everybody will have a great time. Well, of course, the dogs, their little tails started wagging, and they started wiggling. They thought, this is going to be great. So they all got together, and they built this great longhouse. So when they were done, Elder comes in, and he looks at it. He looks at the walls and the ceilings and the beams, and, oh, you've done a great job. This looks wonderful. And he looks all around in the fire pit, and everything was all set up. But he said, I remember when I watched the two-leggeds in their longhouse, they had to rest from all that dancing and drumming, and they had benches. And I need you to make some benches just like that. Put benches all the way around. Well, so as good obedient dogs that they were, they went to work and started putting all the benches around. So Elder comes and he looks at everything and, oh yes, it's just beautiful. And then he takes a look at the benches and they're covered with dirt and dust. And of course I can't do this visually, but when I tell the story I have coyote tail in my hand, holding it to my tail, my rear, and I'm flipping my tail. How could this have happened? So, oh, I know what it is, those dirty, dusty tails of yours.
Well, why, sure.
We're going to have to make pegs outside, and every dog is going to have a peg and put his tail, hang his tail up there on that peg, so when we go inside, you won't get my benches covered with dirt and dust. So the dogs were very upset about that. What in the world? We've got to take our tails up and hang them up there. That's just not right. But as obedient dogs that they are, or were, they, of course, accordingly put all the pegs all the way around. So then he went and said, now, I need three dog warriors. I want you to watch all the baskets of water, make sure that they're full. And the feasting bowls must be full of food. And the fires must be all ready. So then he sent out three more dog warriors to all the dog villages.
I have
no
idea.
All the dogs could come and look at this great longhouse that he had built.
Not a single thing about it.
So all the dog villages started to arrive, and these three dog warriors were very busy keeping things up. Everybody had a great time. And it was dancing, drumming, singing, telling stories, eating, having their water, and being warmed by the fire. Everybody had a great time except for these three little dog warriors. They were so busy filling the feasting bowls and making sure that the water baskets were full, making sure that the fire was bright and warm. They didn't have a time for anything. And just one of them just sat down and said, you know what? I can't do this. We're not having any fun at all. I've got an idea. So why don't all three of us fill the water baskets, and then all three of us fill the feasting bowls, and then all three of us build the fire up, make sure that it's nice and warm. So they proceeded to do so. And then, of course, things were caught up, and they got to run around and have a good time. But the elder noticed that when you make a fire too high, it can get pretty big and the flames can reach very high. And they started touching the ceiling of his longhouse and the house, and the longhouse started to catch on fire. And all the dogs looked and they saw the fire and they ran out the door and grabbed any tail that they could find and put it on. Now, from that day until this, have you ever seen a dog that has a tail that doesn't look quite like the one that it belongs to him?
Yeah.
That's why they snip each other's behinds every time they meet up, trying to see who's got that other tail. And that's the end of this story.
Wow.
But the curious thing, Will, is that these stories are thousands of miles apart. I heard them by the old people down there in Mexico. Not with so much detail. Of course, Native Americans up in north of Mexico are more eloquent in their descriptions. Although in the codices, you know, in the Mayan and Aztec codices, they're very eloquent as themselves, but not so much storytellers. You hear more legends of what's going on in Mexico. And changing the subject here for a moment, Popocatépetl is blowing.
Yeah.
The one do you know the legend behind that volcano?
Refresh our memory.
It's beautiful. Okay. Well, Popocatépetl, he was just an Indian. Down there, they say Indian. Not Native American. And he wasn't very high in the ranks. And he was in love with Iztaccíhuatl. And she was the chief's maiden, daughter. And, of course, being the chief's daughter, they could not have any kind of romance together, but they were both in love. So Popocatépetl decided that he was going to go out and go warring, go on, become a warrior, and come back successful. And then he would raise in category so he could marry the chief's or the king's or the chief's daughter. Excuse me. And so he did. But her father, the chief, told her that he had died and he's never coming back. So she committed suicide. You've heard that story, but it is a very romantic. It is, and it's on all the calendars. You'll see it. So he, when he came back triumphantly, he thought he was going to ask for her hand and found that she was dead. So he picked her up in his arms and took her over on a hill and laid her on top of this hill. And this is the mountain of Iztaccíhuatl. And if you see it, you can see her hair hanging down. You can see her face, her nose, her chin, her neck, her chest, her hands over her abdomen, her legs, and her feet. And then the other side of the mountain goes down. And Popocatépetl, he's the smoking mountain. He is kneeling next to her, and he will always be the smoking mountain because he's keeping the legend of her alive. And when I was in the hospital with my son down there in Mexico City, the people there tell me that when you go up to that mountain, you have to be out of there before dark, because if you're not out of there before dark, you won't come back alive, because Popocatépetl will take your spirit to continue smoking and keeping the legend alive of Iztaccíhuatl.
Mm.
It's a beautiful story. Beautiful story. And, you know, even up here, there's stories similar. How a Mayan woman, of course, that is still down there, she wanted to get married. And her father said, well, you'll get married when you finish weaving your hammock. So she'd weave her hammock all day long, and then she'd unravel it at night because she was in love with another person that wasn't her equal, another man. And she would unravel it at night, and then she'd keep on stitching it so she could postpone this wedding that she didn't want to have. Well, her father found out and murdered her lover, and now that's why every time you see the sun and the moon in the same sky, that's the two of them loving each other. I remember that. I love legends because I believe legends have a bit of truth in them.
Oh, that's beautiful. You got a fun job up there.
Stories.
Tell people about where
I
you work.
I know, honey, but it's dying. This is its last year.
Oh,
it's really sad. School funding and whatnot. It's just a shame. I wish I could talk to Microsoft man. That's his name.
Yeah.
You know, because he and his entourage were going to go out there to where I used to work and visit, but he couldn't go. But he sent his entourage. What's his name? Microsoft man.
Yeah.
Bill Gates. Yeah.
Right.
Thank you. I'm sorry. Yeah. But he knows about the place. I wish there was some way to communicate with him. And here I am, close to Seattle. But I'm out by the mountain. I'm out by Mount Rainier. And I love it. And I suppose I could, you know, somehow just walk into the building and just leave a note there for Mr. Bill Gates from this place that I used to work at.
Don't know why not.
Can you save it? I mean, shoot, other people do other things, and it's really an educational program, but it's got to be run by different people. Because
well, you know,
there's
some kind of Native Council up in Seattle, and while I was there, I was and didn't get a chance to because I got I had to leave earlier. But that may be something that we could look into.
Prophecy Keepers Radio. This is Josh Agonie, Will Bluewater, a seventh grade grandson of Samanuka, keeper of the Holy Cherokee Ark, who during the American Revolution became first beloved man of the Cherokee, head man of the Upper, Middle, and Lower Cherokee. Please join us at 5 p.m. Pacific Time on Sunday evening and learn how you, regardless of ancestry, may gain the privilege of worshiping as you please, even using indigenous plant-based native sacraments. Aho.
You are listening to a pre-recorded interview from the archives of Prophecy Keepers Radio. You have been led by the Spirit to Prophecy Keepers Radio, a cooperative service of the White Roots of Peace Council. Whether it be the modern Asaga of Peru, the current Kahunas of Hawaii, today's medicine people of the Americas, the Holy Ones of Africa, shamans of the East, North, West, and South, or the present-day Atawahis of the Cherokee, we bring you the traditional elders and teachers of our modern times and their confidants from the Americas, the steppes of Asia, the Holy Land, the islands of the sea, Africa, and Australasia. We have not been conquered, and we defy the established order. This is Will Bluewater, the host of Prophecy Keepers Radio, speaking on behalf of the White Roots of Peace Council.
It's 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow? It's a 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow? It's a 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow?
Thanks for listening to the Wisdom of the Elders on Prophecy Keepers Radio, revealing closely guarded ancient secrets here in the modern information age of Aquarius. OCO, Ginalii, this is Blue Otter coming to you from the Cumberland Plateau, the ancient home of the Aniuntikwalaski, the people of the lightning and thunder, or the military protectors of the Cherokee Nation. I know, Roland's grandson, Red Wolf Pope, is up in that area. So, yeah, let's bounce it around.
Not Red Elk, right? Red Wolf?
Rolander. Right, his grandson, Red Wolf Pope.
That would be something interesting. But it would have to be taken over by other people, because these people have mismanaged for so many years. It's karma is what it really is, honey. That's all it is. And it's sad. It's very sad, because I had so much fun. We all had so much fun. And we would, as tour guides ourselves, we would pump each other up too, you know. If we had something to gripe about, we'd go back behind the smoking room and we'd gripe about it. That was our therapy. Come back out with a nice, happy face and enjoy the children again. You know,
it was really, and
one little girl just came up to me, beautiful round chubby cheeks, brown chubby cheeks, and she said, "I'm Shoshone." I go, "Really?" I said, "Did you know that Sacagawea was Shoshone?" She said, "Yes, I know. She's my great-great-great-great-great-great-great-grandmother." She said, great-great-great-great-great-great. And I said, "Honey, can I hug you?" And then she gave me a hug, and I think it was her mother or her. She said, "No, it's her great 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 grandmother." Of course, Mexico, when Cortez came to Mexico, he hooked up with Malinche, who would be the Sacagawea of up here, but down in Mexico, Malinche, she is hated by the Mexican people because she's the snitch. And if you act like a snitch, then you're a Malinche. It's a bad thing down there. They consider Malinche a traitor.
That's pretty close to being Pinche. Anglos hear these things and. You know, a Pinche, and it means tight. From what I understand.
Oh, yeah, because it's pinch. They think it's pinch. It's like a.
Yeah, you're being.
Invented word for pinch. No, but, Pinche means. I can't say that over the air.
Well, Robert Three Eagles explained to me that People south of the border believe that they're more passionate about things, and they feel people up here
it's kind of like
the difference between people in England and us. You know, and people over there are just so closed off, but you know, people in Mexico think we're closed off.
Well, the difference is because, believe it or not, and I'm going to get a lot of people on my back for this, but there's more freedom down there than there is up here.
I can imagine, because there's less government.
Want to hire or don't want to hire a certain person for something about them that you don't like, if you don't want to hire them, you don't have to.
Yeah.
But if it was here, because I have these kind of rights, because I'm like this, I'm going to make you hire me, sucker.
Yeah.
You know, it's not right. There's not, and that's just a grain of sand. As far as rights, because I've talked to people who've been down there, and they said, "Oh my God, it's great," and they say the same thing. You have more freedoms down there. So of course, I was down there last month. Oh my God, it's,
you know,
much better.
They want
not as crazy.
Yeah, the Cherokees wanted to move back there. You know, and after they were herded into Oklahoma, and the U.S. government wouldn't let them go. That's where we come from.
Well, didn't Geronimo send a lot of his people across the border before he turned himself in?
I'm talking about the Cherokee, though.
Yeah, I know the Cherokees, but Geronimo was in Arizona, New Mexico, area, and he sent his people across the border. I don't know if the Cherokees asked permission, but as you know, a lot of Cherokees ran and hid up in the Carolinas.
Yeah,
and they had
just
to do the Trail of Tears.
The entire nation, they just wanted to leave en masse and buy a colony down there, and they wouldn't let us go.
Yeah, I think everybody should see the movie Five Nations by Kevin Costner.
Exactly.
It will bring you, everybody out there, I promise you, it will bring you to your knees with
tears
and shame.
I think
everybody. Tears and shame.
And then there's another one. There's been several of the miniseries. The one I don't see so much is the one that Wes Studi did that was really excellent. I can't even remember what it
was
called.
Was he Bounty?
No, he did. It wasn't a movie. It was like a 6-hour miniseries.
Oh yes, I saw that.
I can't even remember what it's called.
His last name was Ross, and he was a plantation owner. He was Cherokee, but he became he lived a white man's life with restrictions, right? And he was dressed in white man's clothes, and he had a plantation, and he was a good man and landowner, and Ross, I suppose, too. Because I saw that was
well,
really
what I'm
want to
talk
too.
About is. Is Wes Studi
United We Stand?
No. Playing himself, he narrated like a 4 or 6 hour miniseries similar to 500 Nations, and I can't even remember what it's called. But he did a really good job.
We shall stand.
The stand?
We shall remain. That's it.
Oh yeah. Oh, that's right. Yeah, we shall remain. That's right.
We shall remain.
That's absolutely right. That's right.
And that's like a five-chapter series, and that is something that everybody should see, too.
At Dreamkeepers, everybody should see.
Oh, Dreamkeeper, my favorite, Grandpa.
Oh, man, I sat and watched
and
that ten times. The same day I watched it 10 times. And
yeah,
I watched it three
I know
four times the next day.
I am sitting on that couch. It's still right there.
Yeah.
That's a good couch. I'm going to reupholster that couch.
Excellent.
Brown, because I got all these damn dogs.
Yeah.
My babies. And now I have two cats, and my kids are back, Espy and their fiance, so I got a house full.
Oh, wow.
I was turning into a hermit and enjoying it, but, you know.
Well, I enjoyed visiting with you.
I thought it was great when you came over. I really appreciated your visit and was glad to be of service.
Well, I wish I could have stayed there longer, but, you know, my son's roommate was just wacko.
Yeah, you were going through that then, too, yeah.
And
That was crazy, too.
Ended up stealing stuff from my son and just nuts. And, if anybody's out there and wants to ask Susie a question, the number is 347-996-3318. And the number's right on the page in front of you. And we got about another 20 minutes or so before we're going to... I thought I'd replay the interview that Shirley MacLaine did with me back in July of 2004.
Okay.
And...
I've got to get you on here.
But what's been up to?
She's a fascinating gal. She knows more than she lets on, you know. Of course, in her books, you can really see how she really is and faces.
She interviewed me right after. She interviewed me right after Mel Gibson's Passion of the Christ movie, and she buttonholed me about, you know, what I thought of the movie. You know, and I'm not wanting to be politically incorrect. I said something like, "Well, you know, I guess he was he had the strength of his own conviction, you know," and I just let it be at that because she didn't approve of the movie.
No, well, you know, to each his own. Different strokes. Because you can't, we all can't. That's what makes the whole thing diverse. It's like people think, oh, we got to have peace on earth. Excuse me, we have north and south. We have day and night. We have black and white. We're always teeter-tottering. There's never going to be peace on earth. There will be better times, but not peace on earth, because we are balancing. We have to be in balance, teeter-tottering all the time. And that is in our own person that we have to find that balance in ourselves,
mm-hmm.
because sometimes we get too mad, sometimes we get too sad. You know, those extremes, or almost extremes, are hard on our spirit. You know, we have to learn to balance ourselves.
That's right.
Make our own peace in our own little world, not so much peace on earth entirely, because I listen a lot to Graham Hancock. I'm
mm-hmm.
fascinated with his stuff, and I am going, I don't know when, but I'm going to South America, and I am going to drink the ayahuasca, because I have some issues I need to clear up, which I... realized that, or still my family, when going down there visiting them in Southern California, stirred up a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
And I'm not happy about it.
Yeah, that happens.
Yeah, but
you know what they say about
Hancock and his...
They say, you know what they say about family? Friends are creator's way of apologizing for your family.
Yeah, and I've got a few of those, too. I'm kind of, with all the knocks, I've just kind of hermitized myself, and I really don't mind it.
Yeah.
You know, even where I live, you know this lovely little community where I live.
Oh, it's beautiful.
You know, there's always, and we have this beautiful view of Tahoma.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of people call it Rainier, but the original people here call it Tahoma, and I don't like to call it anything else but that.
Hey, Mark Bortrading, if you're listening out there, give us a call, and he's kind of a resident expert about the Mayan calendar. He's been given a lot of insight about it, and really knows it backwards and forwards. And
mm-hmm. I have no fear of that, whatever it may be, because, as you know, it is what it is, you know.
Yeah,
if
right.
we're meant to be saved, we shall be. But I always embrace the Bible the New Testament, where the meek shall inherit the earth. To settle me, this is my this is my little pacifier, because I need that. Because if I could get myself all in a ruffle about 2012, what am I going to do? I'm shortening my life just worrying about it. Excuse me.
Yeah.
If it's going to be, it's going to be, you know. If it's not meant to be, you can stand under a tree and you'll be safe. You could be right out there in the middle and you'd be safe if you are one of his chosen few. And if it's not, this is just a shell that we travel in. This is just a vehicle. You know, our spirit, I believe, this is just me, our spirit will go on. And then I don't know if you've ever read any of Brian Weiss's stuff, Dr. Brian Weiss. He's regressive hypnotherapist. And he has done many, many renowned cases of taking people back in time. And would they, at the moment of death, they say, even the person who had died in a fire, which would be the most worst way to go. And this person said, well, that's just my shell, but here I'm fine. His spirit was looking at him dying because he was under hypnosis. He said, but that's just my shell. Here I'm fine. So it kind of, that helped me with my pain from losing my son, you know, a lot. Because I figure, you know, you just got to make yourself, you got to pull yourself together.
Yeah, that's right. Well, we do have Mark on the line. Say hello, Mark.
Hello.
Hello.
Yeah, meet Susie Cawthorn. This is Mark Borcherty, the fellow I told you about.
Okay.
With my calendar whiz.
Goodness gracious, would I love to talk to you for hours.
Well, the
what
day sign were you born on?
Well, I was born May 1st, 1949 in Southern California.
May
1st? Mm-hmm.
1949?
Yep.
Okay, let's see.
What you got?
So you were May 1st, 1949. You were born on the third day of the Azure Reed cycle. And that's men or three eagles.
Mm.
That indicates some eagle energy there.
Eagle and
Reed.
Well, that's good for perspective. He talks about eagle as a totem. He tells you to have a better perspective on things, so that's a good thing.
And you've got, he pairs with Akbal. So eagle and Akbal, which is the dreaming, intuition, cave, and underworld, and all that stuff. So eagle and eagle, underworld, and caves. Interesting.
Sometimes I
and
think
Reed.
I have been.
Huh?
No, I do. I have some kind of gift that I don't quite understand yet, and that's another reason why I would like to try ayahuasca someday. Because I want to understand what my gift is. I'm not quite sure. I perceive things, and it just seems very easy for me to tell what's going to happen. But a bunch of other things. It's an odd gift. I think it's a little bit of everything. And in my family, we have that. So you have three eagles. Akbal, did you say?
Hold on a second. Well, the Akbal is a pair. When you go in the 13-day cycle and you flip it over to the other side, so you go 1 to 13, each one will pair as they go into the center. And so you flip it over, and it'll give you 11 Akbal, which will be your kind of power counterbalance within that same cycle. It's your balancing point. And so it's Akbal and Eagle, and they're both typically on mind medicine, will it be a black or a blue color? Both of them would be.
Oh, really?
That's also the cycle that Pakal was born in, the guy that did the temple inscription. So your birth is in that same cycle. He was actually born and died in that cycle. He had actually born and died on his parents. He was born on 8 Ahau, and he died on 6 Etznab, and those are the pairs. So his birth and death were literally the pairing in that same cycle that you are born.
Oh my goodness, that's totally fascinating. And
so
also,
I would say
you
that, you know, that probably...
Go ahead. You were going to say?
So I would say that, energetically you have some some kind of... You might feel compelled or be drawn to that possibly, so you might want to go down there and look at that.
Go online
and look at it. Sometime maybe after you do that, I can talk to you about the lid and tell you
Susie,
a few things about it.
What day and month did you say you were born?
May 1st, 1949.
Okay.
Friends, this is Will Blue Otter, encouraging you to obtain an authorized participant or AP card and become a federally recognized Native religious practitioner. Presently, Aqua Native American Church is the only Native American church spiritually blessed by the Rosebud Reservation Native American Church and has a certificate of existence in the state of Utah that is authorized to worship on or off tribal grounds and has met the Standard of Sincerity and Vow of Poverty standards in the state of Utah and federal courts. This card is designed to assist all people regardless of their racial makeup, political affiliation, social and/or financial status, and receiving their constitutional rights. This card is also designed to assist United States judicial officials to honor their solemn oath to protect and exercise the principles of the United States Constitution while carrying out their duty and serving their fellow citizens. To join the movement that is strengthening and exercising the principles of the United States Constitution, please obtain your AP card by visiting NativeAmericanChurch.us today.
I'm checking something else. And
My last number is 11.
Do you know what time of day you were born?
11:15.
In the morning?
When they looked at the clock, yep.
Okay.
When they looked at the clock, it was 11:15. So it could have been 11:11. I wouldn't be surprised. 11 follows me.
Well, I'll give you another.
Because those are the pillars.
I gave you another little bit, though, too. And this one's going to be a little bit more as we move between world cycles. And that one shows this one has three positionings, kind of. One is a forward flow of time. It anchors to the current Mayan Zulcan calendar, long count. And it anchors to that. Has another one that's another flow of time, which is moving backwards. So it's coming back at us from what we call the future backwards towards us from the next world cycle. That one's anchored in a junction between human consciousness awareness of that time period along with the Mayan calendar.
Hey,
and then
Mark,
we have a unity point, which is the balance between the two.
Mark, got a quick question. Did you say there was a pairing involved here?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, there's all kinds of pairings, balancing things that go on within the Zulcan, actually any system. It's what she was talking about earlier about duality and balancing and trying to find things.
And pulled.
It's the same thing. If you in the Mayan Zulcan, you have 13-day cycles. So the seventh day actually pairs with itself. It mirrors itself. And then you got the 6 and the 8, the 5 and the 9, and each of the pairs will add up to 14, 2 times 7. And the first and the last day, the 13th day, will pair. So they pair as they move inward, so the 7th day will balance. And she was born on the 3rd day, which means the 11th day of the cycle, 3
no,
and 11
No, honey, I was
14.
Born on the 1st.
Hmm?
I was born
no,
on the
you were
first.
Born on the 3rd day of the cycle.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Three men you were born on. So you're born on the 3rd day of the cycle, which pairs with the 11th day, which is 11 Akbal. So that's kind of the calendar balancing. So you have Eagle and you have Akbal, the cave. So that's an interesting combination because it's almost dual energy. It's almost like the Eagle has the vision energy, but the Akbal energy is also dream and intuition, like the Aborigine dream time. So it's like a dream time eagle that can fly through the underworld. It's kind of the opposite of what you normally think of an eagle. So that one, if you pair with that and you balance these two things together,
mm-hmm.
what it means, this is an eagle that can fly through the dark.
Hmm.
That would be
and cool. That can be helpful because when you're traveling from one world to the next world cycle, you kind of have to go through the period of darkness that the Popol Vuh talks about. The Mayan Book of Creation,
I
Popol Vuh.
Now you've totally inspired me.
So that gives you some interesting. Now I'm switching over now, so I'm moving out of that realm, and I'm moving
mm-hmm.
into another Zulkan system. And this Zulkan system I'm looking at your birth at is for the next world cycle. So it gives a perspective of looking what we would call forward in time from our world cycle to
the
next
flow
one.
Of time.
And then the reverse flow of time, which is looking from the next
mm-hmm.
world cycle back into our world cycle. And then the third
mm-hmm.
position is where the two balance and merge. So now I'm going to give you a little bit of reading from that point of view on your birth. So I'm going to give you the reading forward flow, looking forward from our world cycle to the next. In that, what it's saying is the energies that were kind of guiding things from you from birth as we move forward, as you move forward. And those were
mm-hmm.
things like would have been important. Showing is things that were important to you as you were growing up and as you grew up. Things like loyalty, friends, good virtues, heart, working with form. So I wouldn't be so surprised if you did something that built things or did things with forming things. And this probably overlaps into dimensionality. So this would explain why you were talking about Graham Hancock's things where he takes and
mm-hmm.
talks about entanglement and quantum physics.
That's
the dimensionality. So it's your interest in that's actually tying all the way back into your birth and entering. The pairing are what's working with this energy of heart and form and all this is order, eternity, and willingness to make sacrifices. So those are probably things that may have been showing up in your life as you were born and moved forward.
That
now we'll look
sense.
At the other side, going backward. Now these are things probably, in my doing readings for people, this tends to be things that has been getting stronger since around, say, 1998, maybe even before 1998 and after and getting stronger. And these are things that may be showing up in your life becoming important and maybe more important. And these are things about focusing, molding awareness, like forming your own awareness and things.
Mm-hmm.
I think I heard you talking about that a few minutes ago.
flourishing. I've gone to different stages.
Flourishing, prosperity, and ascending, moving up, and moving through dimensionality and presence as you're doing it. And then things like fearlessness, reason, and justice.
Mm-hmm.
So that tends to indicate that you might be going out there and doing a little bit of warrior activity. You're probably been more than likely a little bit more willing to stand up and fight some stuff, probably especially for some other people.
Oh, yes. I would give my life. I would easily, like you say, from 1998, for a cause that I truly believed in, I would give my life for it. I would not think twice. And that's what's wrong with people today. They don't have any cojones, you know? They don't like something. In Mexico, you know what I mean? In Mexico, I don't know, the people down in Mexico, I'll take that back, because they have lost their revolutionary mode because they've been beat so long by the pre-party, their political party. They've been beat down so long, it's hard for them to stand up and really, and then all the other stuff that's going on down there, it's really hard for them to stand up and speak up, and it's not
mm-hmm.
easy, but I would.
I wouldn't doubt it.
I know what I've done in other lifetimes. I know I was a revolutionary.
What'll help you with that?
A woman revolutionary.
Is
I'd love to know.
you have that cycle that that's in is a Jaguar cycle. So you have some Jaguar energy from the future that's there to draw on. And in their culture, and many, all the way through even South American stuff, Jaguar was one of the most powerful.
I know.
And this is interesting
because
the Jaguar ties
to...
back in... Oh, excuse me. Jaguar
he's
also ties back into your Akbal.
He also wears a mirror on his foot. Have you seen that petroglyph?
Balls.
He wears a mirror on his foot. Ah, ha, 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 I know what you're thinking. But that was, to them, mirror was a reflection.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because I remember seeing that petroglyph or the carving of the Jaguar. He was a brother. I don't want to get it confused. But, yes, the Jaguar sound very, very, like you say,
you know,
a lot of energy.
Ixchel, right? Do you know
Ixchel?
Ixchel, I-X-C-H-E-L. You know, have you heard that?
Ixchel.
Yeah.
Ixchel, no. What is Ixchel?
It's something that you might want to look at a little bit and might help give you some guidance as you're moving along here and help you
on your warrior
activities.
Oh, yeah.
Now,
where
these two come
life.
Together, so on one hand, in your birth, we have a lot of things about dimensionality, form, loyalty, love, heart, energy, that kind of stuff. On the future, moving back, it's where you're getting a lot of warrior and fighting activity and justice and reason, okay? Now you're mixing the two. And when you mix the two,
it creates
a zero point. And this is the third reading, and it's the zero point between, or the balancing point between the two. So it represents the doorway or bridge that you're walking across going from one world to the next. So this one tells you kind of, it fine-tunes you, right? Gives you the idea how to kind of zero in on things. And it's saying things about exploring, desiring being aware. Prophecies, and it has the power of the never-ending tone of love. So that's becoming even more pronounced from your birth, and it's combining with the reason and justice and fearlessness on the other side, moving backwards in time. And then it's working with energies of flow, universal water and thankfulness or gratitude. Those are things that are guiding energies. Those are things that are going to really put you and connect you to that just never-ending love thing. And that's creator. So it's going to be that. Just simple thing. And this is actually true for everybody, not just you. But that
true,
gratitude
love.
Every day,
it sounds like
that will make you strong.
Of course. Honey, every meal I take into my mouth, I thank the four corners. I thank Creator for His abundance, and I thank Mother for her sacrifice. Because she made it, and she brought it to life. And I,
you're already doing it.
I thank the Creator.
You're doing exactly
what
you need to do.
Well, no, honey. Well, like you say, it's that intuition, and I really, really appreciate you telling me this, because this so solidifies, so confirms my own, you know, you have your person outside, and you have your person inside. I guess you'd say the spirit. It confirms the feelings that I have about my own spirit. And it's really hard. I don't know if anybody else out there ever has this feeling that... Man, it's kind of tough because you go through life alone. You're born alone, and you're going to die alone. So you're going through life alone, talking to yourself about what you need to do and what's right and what's wrong. And I've seen so much wrong. It's like, you know, in Dreamkeeper, Coyote, the trickster, he says, if I die, who will teach the people what not to do by doing it? You know, in Dreamkeeper. And I know Will remembers that.
Yeah.
And it's like I've learned from my mistakes. I've seen so much wrong that I sometimes I'm accused of reminiscing, and it's not that I'm reminiscing or lamenting, because I don't regret anything that's ever happened to me. I lost a son. I don't regret anything that's ever happened to me because it brought me to where I am today. And I think I am in a much better spot spiritually today. And I do believe that my son who died, it was hard. It was definitely hard, but if nobody was going to pull my head out of my rear, you know, so I had to do it myself. And I just realized that he was given to me for a short period of time, and he was an angel sent to me to jumpstart a spiritual awakening. Because ever since then, I have been walking with one foot in the spirit world and one foot in the material world constantly. Mm-hmm. I see spirit in everything. I can't go to the river and not bring back a bag full of rocks because they all talk to me. You know? Oh, pick me, you know, like donkey. Oh, this one's got lightning in it. Oh, look at the face on this one. And they all talk to me. I go out in the woods, even in Mexico, I go out in the woods depressed. What am I going to do? And blah, blah, blah. I take my dogs and my machete, and I come back with remedies, and I come back with dinner. And that was an abundance for me. So like you say, I do, and I am grateful. One time I was left for dead. And when I saw the sunrise, I saw, and I can see it in my mind now, those purplish pink clouds that just started to come show from the sunrise. And I said, thank you, Lord. With this sunrise, I know you're going to let me live. And every time I see a beautiful sunrise, you know, if I get up early enough, which usually I am, I remember that day and remember that I am still alive. And I am grateful.
Oh, my gosh. I haven't been checking. We've got another caller. Hey, who have we got on the line? Oh. I apologize for keeping you so long.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi, who's this?
Hey, what's up?
My name's Richard. I was just wondering
okay,
if I could
Richard, say, what's up? What you got on your mind?
Not much. Just wondering if I could get a reading according to my birth chart.
Yeah, go ahead, Mark.
Is this a three-way wheel?
Yeah, just where all the four of us are on here. You and me and Mark and our guests.
And our guests, great.
Yeah. Okay, I can do something real quick. Hello?
Yes.
What day you were born on?
December 10th, 1974.
December 10th, 1974. Well, you were born on a day called Ten Taz or Ten Mulak, which is and it's in the cycle of a Hal. So that Hal is the sun cliff. So you got, you know, probably things with the sun is going to be a kind of overall guiding energy for you. The glyph that you're born on is typically thought of as a day of kind of like payment or a repayment or something, and that payment is usually done for the purpose of balancing something. And then, hold on just a second, your 10 indicates some things about creativity, especially if you kind of the main thing on creativity that you got to do is let it flow. And as Blue Otter says, and a lot of the other people, elders that he said, it's one of the best ways of doing that is just making the connection to creative. So the more you do that, the more creative you will. And that creativity will allow you to turn around and use it for the other thing, for payment. And so that's your birth in the current Mayan calendar.
Prophecy keeper.
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments. Folks, the scriptures say, my people perish for lack of knowledge. We live in a world that's becoming more and more dangerous as time goes by. Millions of people are aware of this fact now and are actively preparing. Back in 2004, the folks here at Prophecy Keepers Foundation foresaw this situation and began preparing information for you. Friends, I seriously suggest that you head over to prophecykeepers.info and take a look at the Prophecy Keepers Trilogy and Preparedness Library. The Prophecy Keepers Trilogy is a 1,000-page intelligence briefing. The trilogy is a sum total of many years of collecting, collating, analyzing, and comparing prophecies from all over the planet. Mad Bear Anderson predicted that someone would do exactly what we have done. Mad Bear passed into spirit in 1985 before he could realize his dream of collecting and comparing prophecies from all over the world. He said in his biography, "Someday someone will collect all the native people's prophecies, myths, and legends and would publish them in one place so they could be compared with those of all native peoples worldwide, and then we really will have something." And friends, you'll be absolutely shocked to find out that we discovered exactly what that something was that Mad Bear wanted everyone to know. As it turns out, that certain special something that Mad Bear was searching for in the prophecies has everything to do with your physical safety and how to protect it. Now folks, there's absolutely nothing available on the planet like this collection. You'll receive instant access to the Prophecy Keeper's Wisdom Treasury Vault. This is a huge 4.88 gigabyte library, 3,287 files and 222 folders. You'll also receive direct access to links that will allow you to download all past Prophecy Keeper's interviews. Now folks, I won't kid you, Prophecy Keeper's does need money to continue to operate. So please head on over to prophecykeepers.info and take a look.
Keepers of great wisdom, truth of other times, let the wind blow.
I'll look it up. Hold on, let me look at the other one and see what it shows, because it'll show us a little bit more. December 10th. Oh, hold on, just bear with me a second, because I got too many windows open here. Can't see anything. Okay, so this one's going to be with the different time flows, and so I don't know if you can, hopefully you can remember, there's forward, backward, and a centering or a zero-point time flow. So on the forward, shows things about, it's a read energy, things about shaping awareness, prophecies. Another thing showing up here about creation, fundamental aspects of creation, and your creativity tying in with that. So again, that's going back, communicate with the Creator, get in touch with that, and that is going to really make your creative abilities and artistic abilities work really well. You also have things in this that's instinct, life force, and sacred power, when those things all go together. So it's instinctively doing this and using it, and then it's essentially a sacred power doing that artwork or whatever it is that you're doing for creating. So that's on forward, going since you're born, going forward. Going backward, it's showing things about, probably in the last few years, you've probably been very inquisitive, wanting to know a lot of stuff. It's probably especially things that have to do with healing. Other things, achievement, probably have become starting to become more generous. You also have, on that backward flow, what we were talking about earlier for her, the never-ending tone of love. And you also have some off-ball energy of intuition and abundance and things. So things that have to do with learning, healing, love, generosity, and intuition doing that. Those are probably things that are getting much stronger in your life. And you were also, that day is also sitting in the Jaguar circle just like hers was. So you have, yeah. So we have an interesting synchronicity here. There's a couple of parallels and overlap between you and her.
That's funny, but there's nothing is a coincidence.
Now, where the two come together, you have a clock energy. And this is, what this is a doorway of you walking through, like we said, moving from one world cycle to another. It has ideas of catalyzing things, shaping things for good. Family and family-type relationships will be very significant, probably. You have this thing about creating things at a fundamental level, showing up again, the same one that was on your birth, on the forward flow. And then you have things about illusion, supernatural power, and ancestors. So that would say you'll probably be learning, stepping into this idea of creating an awareness of the holographic aspect of reality or dream time, like the Aborigines say, and what they say, everything's kind of illusion, right. And manipulating that illusion, kind of like Neo in the Matrix movie. Supernatural power and ancestors, those two things are probably going to go together. So I would say, and that will be probably part of your family too. So your family isn't just on this side of the fence. Your family is on the other side of the fence too, what we call right. Dead.
Right.
Those can be guiding you just as much as the living, and sometimes better.
Right.
So listen to those things.
So you're calling us from Arizona?
Yes.
Around Tempe?
Deer Valley.
Yeah, yeah. I looked up your phone number to see where you're calling from. And I knew 602 is Arizona, but that's pretty. I worked down there for a while. It's a beautiful area.
Yeah. Actually, I just moved back.
It is beautiful. The desert has its beauty.
Yeah.
A lot of people say that the desert is barren, but it has its beauty. Everything has its beauty if you look at it with God's eyes, you know.
Yes, it does.
People forget to look into the face of a flower and see the synchronicity and the beauty. And why were the flowers made? You know, to delight our eyes, of course, and the bees and the birds and all that stuff. There's beauty in everything. The desert is that. I like it. I like to look at it. I live up here in Washington State, and we have the best weather in the whole country, believe it or not. Now, your guest, Will, I'm sorry, I missed your name.
Richard.
Oh, yeah, Richard's calling.
Okay.
Okay. But Mark is the guy doing the reading. But,
okay.
Well, we appreciate you, Richard. Do you have any other questions?
That's all. Thank you very much for your time.
Hey, you bet.
Very informative. Thank you.
Call in anytime. Thanks for calling, guy.
All right. Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
If anybody else wants to call in, we're at 347-996-3318, we'd love to speak with you.
Well, Blue Otter, you did her Torah portion?
Yeah, I looked at it, and was part of talking about the Levites, Moses is speaking to the Hebrews just after the two sons of Aaron died, having given an unauthorized sacrifice. So that's why I asked you about a pairing, because there was a pair of them, and they were doing something they weren't supposed to do. and I know,
look,
Susie.
I'm trying to keep myself out of trouble.
Oh, I know, Susie. She'd get together with somebody else, and she'll misbehave. I know.
Well, I do have a partner in crime. She's my buddy.
How's she doing?
We just... this is my friend Tina, who's still working there where I used to work, but she can't work there anymore either. It's too hard on her. But she's my partner in crime. I have so much fun with her.
How's your daughter?
And it's crazy. SP, she's doing good. They went through a really rough cycle, and I was not told by her. I was told by him, my son-in-law, or my future son-in-law. They've been together for 8 years. Good grief, my son-in-law. He was more honest with me than she was, which kind of broke my heart a little bit, because, I don't lie to my kids. I never have. It is what it is, because my mom was such a hypocrite, and I saw what she was doing, and she'd go up into her face as a little kid, and what? What is this? No, you just, hey, you're crazy, and blah, blah, blah. sent me to a shrink and everything. Dude, I thought I really was crazy.
Yeah,
and then
mine
I realized
did,
it ain't.
Mine did the same with me.
The same?
Oh, yeah.
But we're special, dude. We're special. This is, there's nothing wrong with us. It's just, my sister says, you're different. I said, look at Pat. In my world, I am not different from anybody else. But in your world, I am.
That's right.
In your world, you know, you're not different from anybody else. But in my world, you are different.
Well,
different strokes. She's, go ahead.
I think the church invented psychiatry just for the purpose of, you know, branding people that they didn't like. And it started with the Inquisition and ended up with your local psychologist, you know.
And your local police and everything like that.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, we're losing our police up here in town. And finally, the jig is up.
Oh, there's not enough crime
there. It goes on everywhere. Yeah, it goes on everywhere. But they, I'm going to get myself in trouble. I better not talk about this. That's politics. Let's not talk about politics. I won't touch religion. I'll touch, but politics, no.
But
because politics is too many haters out there.
Yeah, no kidding.
And religion, we get passionate about religion too. But I was baptized Catholic. I was baptized Methodist, and then when I went to Mexico, when in Rome, you know, I was baptized Catholic, and I'm not ashamed of it at all. I mean, Catholic priests are the only ones that can do a successful exorcism. So there's got to be something there.
Mm-hmm.
They know how to do stuff. But I'm not saying it's the greatest, and I'm not saying it's not corrupt. We all know it. But, oh, well.
Is your
maybe I shouldn't rock the boat too much, but organized religions to me, my God is out in the woods.
Yeah.
It's out in nature.
Is your comadre still
she's
alive?
Everywhere. Yes, she is. That knucklehead. For a while, I had a walkie-talkie. And, of course, you know, in Mexico, it's not happening so much. They seem to have gotten their problems under control. But at the time that I talked to her, it was crazy down there.
Well.
And the minute I got her on the phone, she starts, you know, yapping at me. Oh, do you remember so-and-so? Oh, well, you got, shut up, and stuff like that. And I go, oh, my God, that's why I don't want to talk to my comadre. I don't want to know that stuff anymore.
Well, is she like
I don't deal with that.
Is she a curandero or is it a practitioner or what?
Well, my daughter-in-law, she's from the same town as my comadre. And I saw my daughter-in-law a month ago. I was down there with my son and my granddaughters and with my mom's 90th birthday. And I just wanted to go and come back. I didn't want to mix with those people. But my son, oh, I had such a great time. Anyway, his wife is good friends with my comadre, although there's she could be your daughter, but Mexico, there's no age difference.
Tell everybody what a comadre is.
Oh, a comadre is, she is my daughter's, she's my daughter's godmother.
Okay.
Did I say that right?
Right.
She's my daughter's godmother, yeah.
So
and,
she's your co-mother. Yeah, she's your co-mother.
Yeah, co-mother, exactly. That's co-madre, co-mother, exact
mm-hmm.
translation, yeah. Hit it right on the head there.
Because I remember we
she said she doesn't practice anymore.
Oh,
she
wow.
doesn't heal anymore.
You remember when you and I called?
Yeah, I thought that was great. She just it was a three-way translation thing,
uh-huh.
and it was fun.
Yeah,
I love translating.
They didn't. They don't have otters down there, so she said my name down there would be Nutria Azul. Or a blue nutria.
Oh, you silly. That's right. You remembered that.
Nutria's like a swamp rat, you know. That's close enough.
Yeah, with no tail.
But
yeah.
I can't. What
but
was
the
it?
Tail's the most important thing.
What was it that she told me? I can't remember what it was. I can't
about
remember what.
About the Cummings?
Yeah.
Oh, gosh.
Do you remember what the gist of the conversation was?
Well, the gist of the conversation is what is coming, and I think we all, in our spirit, feel this. It's just the news media. You know, there's control with chaos.
Mm-hmm.
You put people under chaos, and you can control them. So that's what they want. So, but I think in our spirits, we pretty much all believe that there is going to be some hard times, but we we'll overcome them. You know, we will come out smelling like roses. I don't believe this whole 2012, end of the world, apocalypse, you know, I choose not to.
Well, neither do the Mayan elders.
Because I want to send out a positive feeling. If we're all going to be under the thumb of whoever's causing all this chaos, and we really do know who it is, they want to put us under stress. I'm not going to send to the universe stress. I'm going to send to the universe love and acceptance. And then maybe it will change. Maybe it is going to be good. But if the government keeps everybody under stress and under chaos and under control, that's a lot of negativity.
That's basically
so
what the elders
have to.
That's what the elders said when they were on my show. They said, you know, there's nothing written in stone about 2012, and you know, what could happen could be different in one town and then from the next, depending on the consciousness of the people that are living there.
Well, I figure up here where I am, there's plenty of water and there's plenty of critters in the woods.
That's right.
And that's what we're getting ourselves ready for. You know, my sidekick, she watches Doomsday on TV, and she talks to me, and she gets all upset, and she gets all worried, and you know, they're doing this, and they're doing that. I said, look, calm down, Tina. It's going to be okay. You and I are survivors, period. She's a number 11, just as I am. My life path number in numerology is number 11, and so is hers. And we say the same things at the same time. We think the same things at the same time. It's like, oh, just get out of my head, will you? She is funny, but she watches this, and I said, don't let yourself become part of the chaotic. Just roll with it. Just roll with it. There's nothing you can do about it. You can stockpile up to the yin-yang, and it's not going to do you any good because you got a negative thought. I mean, whatever. Oh, I'm going to be a survivor. God has it made for us. We'll be all right. And I don't know. Sure as hell don't want to be in the cities. It's like Red Elk said when I was with him in New Mexico with a group, and I have his picture here right next to me. He said that the big cities, is what they're doing is they have big cisterns of water underneath the big cities. And oh my goodness, the drought is causing the dam to go down. And oh my goodness, the drought has caused the lake to dry up. They're taking all this water and putting it under the cities because when, you know what hits the fan, people will have to be in the cities because that's the only place they'll be able to drink water, which is essential for us, duh. So that's how they're going to control people. It makes no sense. Here next to Tahoma, where I live, there's about, I could say easily, 10 lakes around me full of fresh glacier water. Springs pop up everywhere, you know. It's natural springs. To me, God has me here for a reason, and I don't know what it is yet. But I have totally, you know, I go down to Southern California, and I just, first couple of times I went down, I go, oh, this feels weird. I just don't understand it, you know. And by the third time I went down, oh, I missed the embrace of the trees. You can't, the people here are not, I got up, when I went down to San Diego, I get on the plane. Leaving Washington State, we had a stopover in Oakland. All the way to Oakland, the plane was quiet, peaceful, everybody doing their own quiet little thing. People bored in Oakland, coughing, sneezing, hacking, talking, making noise. And I go, ooh, the difference in the cities and the states, you know, the stress states and the not-so-stress states. You can't, how can you be stressed when you're on the freeway going to work, let's say going to Seattle, even if you're in the traffic, you see bald eagles flying by, you see red-tailed hawks flying by, you see different wildlife, the trees, I mean, all this talks to you.
Oh.
Hi, friends. This is Will Bluewater. If you have been listening to our program for long, then you know that Mark the Badger Borcherding does a Mayan birth reading for each of our interview guests. Mark suggested that he give away a free reading for each donation of $20 or more to Prophecy Keepers Radio, a ministry of Oklahoma Native American Church, or the White Roots of Peace. So please support Prophecy Keepers Radio by making your free will offering at nativeamericanchurch.us, and you'll receive this gift reading. If you choose to make a recurring donation, once you've received your own reading, you can give readings away as free gifts. So why not head over to nativeamericanchurch.us and make an offering right now. Hope to be talking with you soon. Bye now.
It just talks to you. I don't know. I have a cedar tree right next, I don't know if I showed you, Will, right next to the lot where I live.
Mm-hmm.
This cedar tree, the Coast Salish would harvest the tree. They would take about the width of my hand and they'd peel it off. And then they would make their baskets, they would make their clothes, and they could only harvest that tree once in its lifetime because otherwise it would die. And so the cedar tree that's next to, from my bedroom window here, I can see it. It's been harvested. That tree's been here for a couple hundred years at least, because it's now 100 years old. Where I live used to be a gathering area for the Native Americans here, for Indian Henry and his tribe. And the trees talk to you. They just do. People talk about Bigfoot. I'm going off on another tangent. Why can't anybody find it? Because Bigfoot can talk with the trees. He's one with all those creatures. All the people out there, the tree people, the bird people, the four-legged. He's one with them. That's why they'll never find it.
Yeah.
Because he's one with them. He can talk to the trees. He can probably be a tree. I was watching something very interesting the other day about Bigfoot. In fact, one of the biggest Bigfoot findings was here in the next town from where I live, where they saw they found a body where he had laid down, and he left his body print there in the ground where he had laid down. It's just over here, stone store of mineral. He's all around here. I've heard him. Not up here. I heard him once when I was in Northern California.
Mm-hmm.
I was skinning a deer. Me and my son, we dragged the deer up the hill. Well, let me tell you, I saw it get hit. Can't get me now, anyway. It's too late. He's disappeared. I saw a deer get hit, and I said, hell no, I'm not leaving this good meat here on the side of the road. And so my son and I got my knife, whoosh, 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 start sharpening it. And we drag it up the hill so we're not on the side of the road completely. And then I hear this big, long screech. But we were in a canyon. Because it was 99, I don't remember exactly where, but it was, the river was going right by us and the road too. So it had to have bounced off the hills. And I couldn't figure out where it came from. But it sounded not very far away. But I figured he might have been claiming that kill. And then it did it again. And then my son answered it. And then it didn't do it anymore.
Hmm.
So that was kind of cool. I've seen a flying saucer. Oh, that's what they called them back in the day. UFO. And I've heard Bigfoot. So that's a biggie for me.
They're around
I'm
up there.
Blessed. Oh,
there's
yeah.
There's a bunch of them up there. Well,
yeah, I'm
let me know when you get talked. Let me know if you get talked out. You know, we'll do something else, or if you want to keep talking.
Oh, goodness gracious! You got me on for a while then. If I can go blabber, to me, all right, Bigfoot. This is just my theory. This is kind of mixed with Graham Hancock, but sort of kind of. To me, Bigfoot. And anybody out there, I don't know what you think. It'd be interesting to hear somebody else's input. But Bigfoot is probably a Cro-Magnon left over. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Where I play with the thought that the aliens came and saw all these monkey men, these Cro-Magnons, you know, almost on all fours, and thought they would, hey, let's do an experiment. So through artificial insemination,
mm-hmm.
there's the missing link. through artificial insemination, they created this better human being, or a human being. I think it was they altered the genetics of Bigfoot or Cro-Magnon, and this Bigfoot that's running around here is probably some of the critters that they couldn't catch. You know?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if anybody's ever thought of that, but I like to play with that thought. But that missing link is, to me, the artificial insemination from the ETs.
Mm-hmm.
And, I'll throw another one at you. Edgar Cayce says there's no such thing as ETs. It's only us in the future.
Yeah. Yeah, that's been written into some scripts. That's our future if we don't make some changes. I've seen that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah.
I kind of believe so.
That's kind of scary.
It does make sense. When I was in Mexico, I took a kind of a beginner intermediate class in Gnostic science. And it's something that I have a very open mind. I'll bring in any kind of information, and then I will decide whether it's good or not for me, even if it's not good for somebody else. Like, I think everybody should look, read up about Gnostic science, what it's about. Alchemy is not so much turning lead into gold. It's change over, like, you, I know you understand, it's change. The alchemy that I was the such and such a person and now I'm better, so I've changed. I've done alchemy. You know, it's a makeover is alchemy. But the Gnostic science is something, well, of course, Nostradamus, he was Gnostic. And I didn't know that at that time, that he was Gnostic. But I was totally engrossed in Gnostic science, too. But your guest, Richard, is he still with us?
Mm-hmm. No, it's Mark.
Is he still there?
Mark's still
there. Oh, Mark. Okay, sorry. Richard was the other guy. Mark.
Yeah.
Okay.
Mark, you still there?
Yes.
Yeah, he's still here.
Oh, come on. Interrupt us anytime.
Nah, you're on a roll.
No, I'm not. You silly.
But, you know, other possibility is Bigfoot's could be leprechauns or fairies or something like that. They could be moving from one dimensionality or reality to another one. Maybe they're doing something like that.
I saw something on, because I don't have cable or satellite or anything. I just get Netflix. And YouTube. And I was watching on YouTube how there was a person who was a witness to the fact that he saw a Bigfoot standing and boom, in a flash of light, he was gone. And then I had to leave to do an errand, and I've got to get back on that and look up into it more. I'm sure he could be a shapeshifter. Why couldn't he? He's a shaman. Bigfoot is a great shaman. He's the shaman of the woods. He's the owner of the woods. He's the god of that kingdom that he lives in. I think he's marvelous. And, you know, you hear good things and bad things, but I hear mostly good things. I think Bigfoot will also assist us in the future when he sees that this change has come over us and with these, I don't know, pole shifts or whatever this change is that's going to be. I can't logically pinpoint anything.
John Red Hat was...
Go ahead.
John Red Hat Duke... He's passed away now, but he was an Air Force officer for 30 years, and he did a lot of duty at Cheyenne Mountain. But he told me that Air Force cadets that do guard duty up against the mountain on the fence, they're told not to shoot Bigfoot if they see him, or they'd be prosecuted for human murder.
Oh, great. That should be the law everywhere. Crackpots going out there trying to make it rich with this dumb thing that they had one in a freezer or something.
Right.
I'm going, Jesus, you guys, let me throw this one out. It's
yeah,
it's,
just leave alone.
I know. They will help us. I'm sure they will assist us in the future. I think they're just waiting. As maybe the ETs, but I prefer a two-legged stick. Well, I don't know. I think Bigfoot is a man of great wisdom. Don't you, Mark?
Well,
Mark.
I haven't sat down and chatted with him, so I'm not sure. Maybe. Yeah.
Well,
that would be interesting to
elude.
Sit down and see if we could figure out how to have a conversation and, you know, see what they say.
Well, people have exchanged things. Like, they'll leave food and he'll bring plants, or I've seen conversations over YouTube. And of course, you know, you can believe some, you can believe all, you can believe none, all of the above or none of the above. But I like to play with these thoughts anyway. But that he has made an interaction with human, with two-legged, or with human, I guess, and he it has traded things, but not on a verbal, like you say, sit down and have a little powwow. Not that, but I'm sure that he will teach us many things. Mostly how to survive, because he's been surviving for God only knows how many thousands of years.
I just got a note from Kevin Smith over the Kevin Smith Show, and he's going to be our guest next Saturday evening. We're working out the details right now, but his show is mostly about UFOs and investigating all kinds
mm-hmm.
of fun stuff. And
that's always fun.
UFO paranormal, yeah.
Yeah, anything paranormal.
I think you'll be a fun guest.
I'm fascinated with it, because that's the side that we don't see. That's our other dimension. And of course, you know, in my youth, and not so long ago, I can admit that I have taken mushrooms, and I remember my first one was peyote, and I saw Wolf. Wolf is teacher, as you guys know. And, gosh, it must have been, this was in the States, and then I was in Mexico. This must have been 20 years later. I was talking to these Americans on the beach, and we're talking about shrooms and stuff, and I said, yeah, and all of a sudden it popped to me, oh, yeah, Wolf? Oh, my goodness, he's my totem. And he was my spiritual guide then, and he is. I see that he's with me all the time, because he's teacher. And here I was teaching these kids, and I've taught a lot in all my, I think I bore my friends, the few of them that I have, because I'm not a very sociable person. I'm talkative, though, but I think I bore my friends because I talk too much about be careful and do this and you have to do that, and trying to give them guidance, and I think I push too hard. That's a little bit extreme on my side. Tauruses always tend to be extremes, you know, either too hot or too cold, and like I was saying before, Mark, that I have to find that balance between myself, because so I can make my own peace within myself. Because I used to be, off the handle. Too many
yeah.
too extreme.
Most people are that way when they're young, and they mellow out.
Well, apparently, I'm going to go be a rebel when I get old. I'm 63. How much older do I have to get to go on out to a revolution? I'll go.
Yeah.
I'll do it. I'll make the tortillas or whatever. I'll make dinner. I'll keep the fire going. I'm going. If there's for a good cause, I'm on it. And I'm 63 and I don't care. I think we have to have a rebel spirit.
And if there's anybody else out there who'd like to call in, we're at 347-996-3318. And
yeah, we've talked about it different things.
Yeah, it's fun.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
It's fun. Yeah, I'll just play. I'll play Shirley MacLaine some other time. I didn't think we'd be on that long, but hey, you know, whatever works.
Yeah. Well, we've talked about Bigfoot, Nostradamus, UFOs, so I'm sure people out there will have lots of ideas to call in about. We're not on just one subject, hitting a lot of them. Anybody
Absolutely.
With any legends?
Did you guys ever hear the clip of the NASA employee that went public about what he learned about the incoming planets when he was working for NASA?
No.
Went and lived in a cave.
Let's listen to that for 15 minutes. We'll take a potty break. And,
sure.
And listen to that, and then we'll come back and talk about it. I'm gonna roll it right now, and then I'll put you everybody on mute.
Friends, this is Will Blue Otter, encouraging you to obtain an authorized participant or AP card and become a federally recognized Native religious practitioner. Presently, Oklahoma Native American Church is the only Native American church spiritually blessed by the Rosebud Reservation Native American Church and has a certificate of existence in the state of Utah that is authorized to worship on or off tribal grounds and has met the standard of sincerity and vow of poverty standards in the state of Utah and federal courts. This card is designed to assist all people regardless of their racial makeup, political affiliation, social and/or financial status, and receiving their constitutional rights. This card is also designed to assist United States judicial officials to honor their solemn oath to protect and exercise the principles of the United States Constitution while carrying out their duty and serving their fellow citizens. To join the movement that is strengthening and exercising the principles of the United States Constitution, please obtain your AP card by visiting NativeAmericanChurch.us today.
Back in the 1950s, most people aren't aware of it, but there was a scientific storm in America all through the late 50s about this thing out there in space because the astronomers were all watching it, and that was back when they weren't afraid to talk about it. It was in the science magazines. I mean, I had a subscription to, like, Popular Science, and hell, it was on the front cover of the magazine one day in, like, 1961. And I was really excited when I saw it, because here's this giant red planet on the horizon of the California coast, and a humongous tidal wave coming in towards the coast, and having grew up in the mountains of the Sierras, and this thing in the magazine, it said this tidal wave coming in was going to be at least 3 miles high, and I went in and showed it to everybody in the house, and they laughed, and they said, look, it says right here, there's nothing to worry about, it won't be here for another 50 years. Hey, guess what? That 50 years has came and gone, and this baby's out there in the sky. They've been watching it. I watched it, and I can tell you, this thing has got so much trash coming around it. You know how we live in a solar system? We've got 9 planets and a big sun. This right. thing has got 7 planets and its own sun. But I believe that instead of having dirt on it like our planet does and water, I think this thing is just a big, bright reddish-orange iron ball because it's giving off all this red iron oxide dust out into the atmosphere. When we thought at first it was just a teeny little red speck of fuzzy red dust in the distance, but over the years as it went by and we watched it, it got bigger and bigger and bigger. And then finally, about 08, we could see this thing like it was across the street. And we could see that it was a blazing hot ball of fire giving out sparkles of red iron oxide dust for thousands of miles in every direction. And you could see the planets circulating it. Now, I'll tell you one thing that I really am nervous about. I think this thing's got a planet like ours circling it. This is its own solar system. We're about to have a solar system come through the middle of our solar system. This can't be good. But unfortunately, it looks as though that's what's going to happen. Hopefully, nothing in this mess will hit us even though it does say it will in the Bible, leastwise it does in my Bible, it says we can expect all kinds of problems. We were looking at asteroids. Right close to this thing, there's asteroids that are floating around right near the, that are orbiting the main sun itself. These things appear to be about 500 miles across. And as you go back into the tail, you get into meteorites that go back for millions of miles in the tail. This thing looks like a giant red teardrop-shaped dust cloud. And you can see, once if you're able to see it up close like we did, you can see every speck out there. I guarantee you there's trillions of meteorites following this thing. Now, these CIA people that I know say that we're not going to be that close to it when it goes past us. They're saying that in order to attain breakaway speed, when it comes up around the backside of the sun, its speed will at least double, possibly more, which will put it here earlier than everybody is saying it will, and that this thing will probably be about 20 million miles from us when it crosses in front of us. And then as soon as it flips us upside down, we're going to go into its debris field tail and be pelted with meteorites. And, of course, in the Bible it says they will Italian 70 pounds. So if you've got 70-pound meteorites falling like hail, and I can guarantee you they will be falling like hail because there are that many in the tail of this thing has got a tail loaded with trash. I mean, it's incredible the amount of stuff that's in this thing's tail. And we're going to go right through that tail. And if it doesn't beat everything on the surface of the ground into a flat putty, I don't know what it'll take. I tell everybody, you better be at least 20, 30, 40, 50 feet underground and have either concrete or stone above you, because it'll break through the roof or whatever you've got if you don't. These CIA guys told me that this pole shift will probably happen from start to finish in around 28 minutes. That doesn't give you a lot of warning. When you see that thing out there in the sky, you're going to have to run as fast as you can to your underground facility, because this is going to happen so fast. Now, see, here's another thing nobody's talking about. You've got this giant iron planet that they say is 47,000 miles across, getting ready to come up past us. And when it starts to approach us, it's going to start and have real serious effects.
So is it a planet or a failed star?
It's not a failed star. It you know, I saw this thing up close. It did not look like a failed star. It looked just like our sun.
Right.
Okay? Would you call our sun a failed star?
No. Okay, well, you had said planet. I wasn't sure if it was like a failed star, brown dwarf, or a full sun. So it's a full sun?
It looks to me like a miniature sun, just like the one we have. The only difference is, see, is our sun is giving off flames and stuff, and this one's doing the same thing as it, but it's giving off this red iron oxide cloud of dust around it. And until it got close, we couldn't even tell what was in there. We could see it was hot, and it looked like it was just a dull red when we were first able to discern it through the red cloud. But as it approached, it started to become more apparent that this thing is just orange hot. I mean, to tell how hot it is, I was told that it was, they estimated between 5 and 10 million degrees, but, you know, I don't really know, if that's right or not. I mean, it's got to be pretty hot because it's sending all of this red iron oxide dust out into space around it.
Right.
And it's got this enormous, and I mean enormous, at least 50 or 100,000 miles on each side of it, this red dust cloud that goes all the way around it. I know when we were watching it, as it started to make the upward swing to approach behind our sun, it was amazing. The red dust cloud settled down. Instead of being round, it started to settle down into a V, like wings, upside down wings.
Right.
And I thought, boy, I wonder if that's where the ancient Sumerians got the idea this thing had wings. Because, you know, centrifugal force is a funny thing. When it comes back up around the planet, when we see it in the sky, my guess is it's going to look like it's got wings, because centrifugal force is going to be pulling the red iron oxide dust and particles out to one side, and then as it starts to climb out and go away from us. Listen, I was told that this thing's magnetic field is going to be so strong, anybody that does not have a padded lead helmet to wear will have their brain gutted for everything they ever knew, and they'll be a complete raving moron after this thing passes. They'll lose their, they won't know, they'll pee in their pants. They won't have a clue what's going on, because this thing will gut their brain. And it, and you know, I was reading a deal in my Bible. It says that after this happens, that nobody will care because they won't be able to remember it. Well, of course, I was told by somebody the reason that that is because the electromagnetic field from this thing will be so strong, because, see, as it comes up underneath of us, it's going to start and pull us toward it. And then, just like a pair of big magnets, all of a sudden it's going to lock onto us. And when it does, it's going to be like the Jolly Green Giant kick the earth in the ass. It's going to send a jolt 500 to 1,000 foot high. This is what I'm told, 500 to 1,000 foot high shock waves all the way around planet Earth. They'll be so bad that in a lot of areas that don't have good solid soil, it'll fluff it so badly that you'll practically be like you're standing in quicksand. And that this thing's magnetic field will literally gut your brain of everything. And so you may want to give some thoughts to getting you some sheet lead, build you a little lead helmet to wear, you know, like a little motorcycle helmet to protect your entire brain and the back of your neck, so that, that way this can't happen. Because, you know, if these guys are right about this, and I'm pretty sure they are, because I know for a fact they know what they're talking about when they say stuff. And so, you know, and it does sound reasonable to me, knowing what I do about electromagnetic energy, that this could happen. And it very easily could gut everybody's brain for everything they ever knew, and they'll stand there and pee in their pants and go, gee, what was that? And that's if they still know how to talk. And there won't be any doubt in anybody's mind, because this thing's going to look like a big red dragon, exactly like all the ancient Sumerians and the Chinese and all the rest of them that had documented this thing's passing before. It didn't look like a white ball or a snow cloud or nothing. It looked like a big red iron oxide dust cloud with a superheated star in the middle of it. And, I mean, you know, and that's what we've seen. So, you know, I don't care what anybody else says. There's a possibility. There's more than one thing out there. You know, I watched it through the Hubble Space Telescope, and when this thing looked like it was across the street, the Hubble got cut off, and they encrypted it, and that was the end of any transmissions we had to watch. And we know that the Hubble, in order to be in the shadow of the Earth, had to be at an angle, and so that meant it was looking downward, right. And this thing was coming up underneath of us, and I tell you the honest God truth, I personally think this thing is real close to us right now, but, you know, that's just my general feeling that, you know, and I'm a pretty psychic guy, I have the feeling that this thing is right close by and that we're going to see it any time. I mean, I've been doing everything I could do to get prepared for it to... I'm really worried about what Jesus says. You know, when the fig tree is putting on its leaves, know that summer is near and I'm at your door. And that worries me more than probably anything I've read in the Bible about this whole thing, the parable of the fig tree, because everything seems to be in place for this thing's arrival. And the bad thing is he says, I'm going to come like a thief in the night. Well, it does also say in the Bible that I'm going to make the sun go down at noontime in Jerusalem. Okay, if that's the case, there's only one thing that'll make the sun go down, not hit the horizon, down, go down at noontime, and that's if the planet experiences a pole shift.
Okay, I got a quick question that you can probably answer really quickly and then continue from the chat room. Wants to know if you're talking about Planet X or Elenin, and I've never thought Elenin is Planet X. Terrell's pretty
well,
stuck on that, but
is.
I think Elenin is a result of it. It's a comet that's been kicked in.
Elenin is extinction level event. Nibiru is near.
Right.
Does that explain it?
Yeah.
Okay. Because listen, they've known about this thing forever, and I mean they've known about it forever. I mean, if I read about it in a science magazine in 1961, that tells you that, I mean, it's only 1,800 years away. How could they not be able to see it when it came around the backside of the last sun and headed this way?
Right, right.
You have to know they've been watching it, because if you know, Carl Sagan was showing stuff that they took with their old telescopes that was billions and billions of miles away, and this thing's only 1,800 years away. Well, And by 1930, it was only 70 years away. You know, we do estimate that this thing, let me give you a thing, maybe you can figure out your own timeline. We estimated that this thing is traveling around 3,500 miles an hour, okay?
Okay.
That was our estimate of its speed. Now, it has been picking up speed, and that's the reason why we think it's going to arrive early, because when it comes around the backside of the sun, it's got to double that speed in order to attain breakaway speed to leave the sun and not wind up orbiting it. It's never orbited the sun in the past that we know of, so that means that it's going to have to attain breakaway speed to head back out into space. Now, you look at the NASA videos, photos, and all this other crap those morons put on the internet. This thing is coming in. It's going to, as soon as it goes around the top of the sun, it's going to go back out into space.
Right.
And it's going to do this really fast. When it goes past us, it's going to go past us so fast that we'll almost have no time to get ready. That's my opinion. But, you know, just drawing it out on paper a few times and thinking about it, and I went, you know, if this thing picks up enough speed to make breakaway speed, then that means it's going to come past us. You know, this thing, according to what I was told, is that this thing is approximately 47,000 miles in diameter, you know, four or five times the size of the Earth, and it'll come past us, and we won't have a lot of warning, and we won't get to see it in the sky until it's on us. I think the NASA timeline is completely off. I think this thing is going to arrive much earlier than they say it is. You know, I know they're saying October, but, you know, if you look at the, you know, now, I was told that the poles are not shifting at 42 miles a year. They're shifting at 42 miles a day. And the reason is because this planet is rolling over to face this thing. Now, when it goes by, it's not going to push our north pole away. It's going to grab our southern pole with its northern pole. And it's going to be like somebody kicked this planet in the ass, that earthquake that it talks about in Revelations when the opening of the sixth seal comes. From what I've been told, that's very accurate, because that's exactly what's going to happen. There's going to be a massive earthquake when it locks onto us. As it goes past us, we're going to follow it right upside down. The oceans are just going to be roaring from pole to pole, as you could well guess they would, because if you take a planet that's 7,000 miles across and roll it upside down in 30 minutes, you're going to have some real serious problems with wind and water. We should be preparing to expect this thing to show up.
Well, you guys back with us yet?
Yep.
Yeah, I'm here.
That's pretty frightening.
Yeah, isn't that interesting? Yeah, it's and, you know, and I remember back in, I was living in California when he was, back in the 60s and you know, in 62, and I remember, you know, I'd go down and every week look for a Mad magazine, or every month, and there was, you know, there it was, you know, in Popular Science magazine, and they were talking about Planet X 50 years ago.
Oh, yeah. Good grief, yes. I believe it was even an old movie in the 50s.
Yeah.
But it's all very frightening, and I'm not saying it is, and I'm not saying it isn't, but what can we do?
Nothing.
But let's keep ourselves calm and in a positive mood. Huh?
There's not a thing we can do, really.
Just keep our positive thoughts and just love and send it out there, you know?
Yeah.
Cause and effect. Maybe we can love it away. I don't know.
If created, well,
we can do about it, though.
Rolling Thunder talked about this, and he felt that that if enough people got together in a good way, that we could repel it or lessen its effects of its passing. Yeah, he talked about that.
We have no clue as to the power of our minds. All these great monoliths and stuff that they, how did they elevate them? Power of the mind, you know. Red Elk, he can elevate himself. And other people, as a group of people, they can elevate a table, and this is minor. Well, not so much in Red Elk's case, of course, but for, you know, regular human people to elevate a table, that's a pretty big deal.
Yeah.
But I'm sure that these people lived in another time closer to God than we are now, and did have their powers were a lot stronger, and they could all get together and probably elevate these big things, these big rocks. Could be. Mm-hmm. Just a thought. I think too much sometimes. I write down, you know, what I think. I get these, like Mark was saying, I'm on a roll. I'll start writing stuff down, and I'll go back and look at them 2-3 weeks or months later, and I'll go, oh, yeah, that's, did I write that? Oh, my God, that's some deep thought, you know. Wow.
Hey, we've got about a dozen listeners out there tonight, and, hey, you still have about 12 minutes left on the show before we have to hit the outgoing bumper music. But, hey, give us a call at 347-996-3318, and Mark will give you a Mayan calendar birthday reading. 347-996-3318. Oh, it's okay. We've got actually, it looks like we've got 20 people that have listened tonight. So, gotta be somebody out there that wants
hey,
to.
Hey, I'm gonna jump on my soapbox.
Sure, go ahead.
Legalize it already. You know what that is? You see it on my face page. People talk about marijuana as a gateway drug.
Mm-hmm.
Well, to get marijuana, you have to go to the streets to people who sell marijuana and other stuff. And, you know, of course, that's going to lead into that because that's the environment that it's in. It's in a dark alley or on a corner.
Yeah, that's right.
But those of us who are medical marijuana patients and actually do need it, it cuts down your doses of the addictive drugs. Those Percocets and Valiums and all those Oxycontin and stuff. Those
exactly.
are extremely addictive. I've been through that. I've gone through that. And I don't have to take such a large dose of prescription drugs as when I can use the drops, because I prefer using the drops because it does a better body function, because I'm not into the mental high. I already talk too much as it is.
Right.
I think a lot. But
you like something more like you like more like a chronic or something. Something that's
You know it. Yeah. But it's because I want to function. There's a sativa, which is an active high, and there's an indica, which is a downer high. And during the day, I will admit, during the day when I can afford it, I will smoke the sativa so I can get things done and function. And in the evening, when I want to not roll around in the bed because of the pain, I'll smoke an indica, which is stronger. And I've seen going to the dispensaries is a place where you're going to find other people with the same reasons that you're going there for. You know, and you're not going to get mauled or mugged or raped or anything because it is an enclosed and safe environment.
Well, I was watching that new cop show NYC 22, there's more and more people lobbying for it, and it takes time. There's a lot of ignorance about it.
There is so much ignorance about it. I, you know, Betsy Ross, the thread that she used was hemp. The first draft of the Constitution was written on hemp paper. Washington, Jefferson, Jackson, they all grew hemp before they grew cotton. Washington ordered everybody to grow hemp, not grow cotton, because it was a big seller.
Oh, you were fine.
They could use it for everything.
You were fined if you did not grow it. And, before
exactly.
Before Stan Oil forced the issue, everything was lubricated with hemp oil, and hemp
mm-hmm.
oil were the two most number one and two traded commodities in the world.
In the world.
In the world.
In the world.
Yeah, sales, rope, clothing.
The
best clothing.
Uh-huh.
Clothing lasts
That's
forever.
Right. The Constitution.
Constitution was written on hemp paper. Absolutely.
Hello?
And you know, when the first drug czar back in the 30s, when he was given that job, you know, he talks about going out on the key bridge.
Well, Randolph Hearst. William Randolph Hearst was the one, because he had the newspaper.
Yeah.
He was the one that set it out there.
But the
word out there that
the first Fed that was the first drug, you know, police guy for the federal government. I can't remember his name, but he was on the key bridge.
Mm-hmm.
He stopped and looked out, and he says it was growing, you know, 10 feet thick, you know, down on either side of the Potomac.
Yeah.
You know, it was basically a law that. It was an anti-Hispanic law, and
they blamed it on the Hispanics because
right.
they brought it over.
Utah was the first
state.
It came
on the Mayflower.
Yeah.
Tell me,
yeah.
Hello. Look at the documentary.
Utah was the Hulu's first.
Got some really
yep.
good.
Utah was
Hulu,
the first state to ban it.
Really good.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And
Netflix has got all the documentaries on it.
Yeah, there are some excellent ones on there. But
just wake up, people,
Thomas,
and
Thomas
Jefferson, it already.
Thomas Jefferson, you know, grew Centimillo.
And
mm-hmm.
And in his memoirs, what did he say in the afternoon? Do you remember? He would sit on his porch with his pipe and smoke hemp and relax and enjoy the beauty
mm-hmm.
of his garden.
Yeah.
So he said, "Hey, you watch Twilight Zone or Alfred Hitchcock." Back in the 50s, I was in the 50s, 60s, everything revolved around subservient woman takes care of her husband. Honey, you're home from work here. Have a drink.
Mm-hmm. Put another log on the fire.
Just drink and smoke.
Yeah.
Watch an old Twilight movie. Twilight
mm-hmm.
Zone, pardon me. Twilight Zone. All they do is it's everything revolves around drinking and smoking, men and women. So, Thomas Jefferson, he just chilled out on his porch with his little pipe of hemp, you know, and it wasn't addictive. You don't go through all that. It's so unjust.
Well, you folks...
that might be my little...
You folks that joined us late, starting about 10 minutes after the... About 10 or 15 minutes after the interview's over... you'll be able to listen to the entire archive version. That's the way it works. And
yeah.